we're going to have Mr.
To you.
Go ahead. All right.
Mel Seidenberg continues.
All right.
Good. And you're the questioner now.
No, you keep going. You're doing great.
No.
Old cemetery, I think we got the information, but we'll speak it into the machine.
Well, the cemetery that's right up behind our house, that's been there for many, many years. This used to be, this whole valley was coal mining, and I think this cemetery was established there. There's, the name of it is Avath Achim.
A-V-A-T-Achim.
A-C-H-I-M.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene Littman, L-I-T-M-A-N, is the president, and his son is in a big law firm downtown in Oxford Center, Littman, Littman, Harris, Brown, and Watsman. And he probably would have, I think he looks out after a number of these cemeteries that no longer have congregations connected with them. Do you want me to go on?
Yeah,
I got you. You know, you took me up as far as 1962. I left the Post Gazette. The reason I left then, I'd gotten so involved with the, what was happening in Pittsburgh that I thought I wanted to get into that. So I had there were three possibilities. One was the Regional Industrial Development Corporation. I was also writing a lot about industrial development at that time, the need for industrial development. And the other was Action Housing, which had just come into being. And I'd written a lot about with their activities, and the other was the Urban Redevelopment Authority. So of those three, I decided on the Urban Redevelopment Authority because I was quite interested in what was happening in the city and the city neighborhoods. So I went to the Urban Redevelopment Authority in March of 62 and set up what ultimately became Department of Community Affairs. Doing a lot of writing about redevelopment and speeches and statements and brochures and histories and so forth. And the Redevelopment Authority was going, had many projects going at that time in addition to downtown. It was two on the north side. It was East Liberty was a big one. Mm-hmm. And then there were a number of industrial development projects.
So you can relax.
You just go ahead and write.
The stadium, of course, the stadium came into being as a result of a redevelopment project north side, and one of the big jobs there that the Redevelopment Authority had to do that was the moving of Buncher's big scrap pile. I don't know if you remember. It was at the end of the old Manchester Bridge. You remember the Manchester Bridge
going?
And the big scrap pile was huge there, and that had to be moved. I think Buncher's moved it out somewhere to Leedsdale or somewhere. But the Redevelopment Authority did that. And I became very interested because the Redevelopment Authority was really having an impact on the whole city. And so then later, the Redevelopment Authority became very much involved in the neighborhoods, residential neighborhoods, Homewood, Manchester, East Hills, and Hazelwood, and so forth. And I found that in the Hill, then the Hill District, and I was very interested in that aspect of it. And
what about the Bunchers? They were Jewish, weren't they?
Yeah, it was Jack Buncher, and I forget his brother's name.
And this scrap pile was being...
But Jack Buncher still has all the stuff in the strip now.
Right. But what were they clearing the scrap piles for? What was built there now?
Stadium.
Stadium.
Well, the stadium was built near there. That was the whole North Shore development area. And it was the new highways were coming, which had just been completed, part of it. And that was to have been developed for hotels originally, and they're still working on that. Near the stadium. But the stadium was the main... And the stadium was located there, partly... I had a little bit to do with that location. A lot of people don't like it now because the original Exposition Park was located in that same area. That's where the Pirates first played. That was their first home, Exposition Park, until they opened up the Forbes Field in 1909. And so... A good, very good friend of mine, John Morrow, was then with the he was the urban renewal top aide in the mayor's office. It was then first originally Dave Lawrence and then Joe Barr, and John Morrow later became city planning director. And we had talked often about the logical place for a stadium right across the river where Exposition Park was, and we had a friend who was running the Northside Civic Promotion Council, a guy named Jack McKee. So we got together and I wrote the story when kind of planted the idea of the stadium there, quoting Jack McKee and the Civic Promotion Council and so forth, and it kind of picked up from there. So a lot of people, even I, have trouble with that location now.
I like it.
Well, I kind of miss Forbes Field though, because
Forbes Field could never have made it and continued. So
well, it couldn't. His pit had,
exactly.
But it was nice there in Oakland because there were restaurants and there was life there. But
true.
And that was supposed to be developed. That was supposed to develop over there, but it didn't come about.
That's right.
So anyway, I was very much involved in particularly promoting and writing and. Or helping to organize or have a liaison with neighborhood groups.
What do you call that section you're talking about where the stadium is?
Well, it's...
Did it have a name like...
The whole area was called North Shore.
Yeah, North Shore.
That was the redevelopment name. But it was the lower north side, actually. Mm-hmm. It's not a stadium area. Now they have some plans that they're working on for the North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
And that North Shore Drive, that's part of that expressway system, which is East Street. Well, the Redevelopment Authority was involved in the initial acquisition, relocation for the East Street Expressway, which is just opened.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a... But my main interest became, along with that, what we could do with the neighborhoods. And we would start working with, particularly with some black groups in the Hill District, a youth group which we helped organize along with a guy named Bernard Jones, who you called... youth group called Urban Youth Action. These were kids that needed, somebody to give them a boost. Mm-hmm. And then we worked with another group. This was my particular involvement under Bob Pease, who is now the executive director of the Allegheny Conference. Working with a group of guys who were kind of street guys, and had a couple have been in jail, but they were trying to find ways to work with people like them to get them jobs and so forth. So that was very interesting to me, and that's what I was doing at the time of the riot.
P-E-A?
P-E-A-S-E.
Mm-hmm.
He's the executive director of the Allegheny Conference now. And then we became involved in after he went to the conference, a guy named Bill Farkas became executive director of the Urban Redevelopment Authority, and we had something called the Hill District Recovery Act, in which some housing was built up there and some other things were done. But 1968, of course, all of that kind of came to a crashing halt when the riots took place, and we were very much in touch with the people in the Hill District and people who were trying to had tried to keep the riots from getting out of hand. And I attended a number of meetings with Bob Pease, because Bob Pease was the connection to some of the big money through the Allegheny Conference. We met with some of the with people in the Hill District. I remember on the Sunday after the riots, when white people couldn't really go into the Hill District, we met with a lot of the militant leaders there.
Nate Smith
was, well, he wasn't one of them then, but there were a number of guys. There was a guy named Ed Ellis, who's a pretty well-known artist. I don't know what he does now.
Ed Ellis.
And I don't remember the names of some of the others, but I was working with a guy named Ralph Hughes, who had a pool hall up there on Heron Avenue. And so... then, but the riots did change things, the focus of things, and because there had to be more involvement of local people. And we had, Bob Pease and I, had gone almost once a week meeting with something called the Hill District Citizens Renewal Council.
What years were
they?
This is around in the mid and late 60s. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Frankie Pace, who was one of the organizers of that Hill District Renewal Council, just recently died. And another one of the leaders is Bob Lavelle, who was the head of the dwelling house. And they just recently disbanded that council.
Mm.
So we continued with that and we're trying to do things with the Hill District and North Side and other things until about 1970. I left there in 70 or 71 because I wasn't quite in agreement with some of the things that were being done by the new mayor, which was Pete Flaherty.
Yeah.
So I left there, and at that time the Port Authority was undergoing mm-hmm. a big change and needed somebody. Port Authority had this thing called the Early Action Program, Skybus, mm-hmm. and so I went there.
What was your trouble with Flaherty? I really want to hear.
Well, he had a different viewpoint than Lawrence and Joe Barr, and that was to cut back on the funding, and there was it was some necessity to do that, but there's just too much. I don't want to get into all that because that's been rehashed a lot. But there was just a different philosophy there, and his philosophy was to. He just changed the whole thinking.
I understand that.
Yeah.
That's clear. Was there a personal component in Flaherty's makeup, animus against certain sectors of our public?
No, I think I don't think so. I think, in fact, I knew him fairly well. I got to know him a little bit when he was on council. I thought he was a nice guy, but then when he went for mayor, I think that was the way he got elected. He was nobody's guy. Nobody's boy. That was his theme, and he was going.
I worked for him when I first came to Pittsburgh on that election.
Did you?
Yeah, and then I wondered if you could tell me why I and the others felt very offended by him thereafter, just for cutting back.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
There was a component there that was more than that.
Yeah.
That's
well,
what I was
he,
asking
he
you.
Had a, he, part of it was the people he hired around him wanted to change everything. There had been some very capable people in city government before that, under Joe Barr and under Dave Lawrence. And a lot of those people were out.
One of them. This is an important point. I'm trying to get it out of you.
One of them, who was out for a short time, was Dick Caligiuri.
That's right. That's right.
And Dick there came back and ran against Flaherty. But Pete was determined to go his own way. He did things. He's different now. He's very cooperative. But he didn't want to cooperate with the.
I decided he was a ripper.
Well,
okay. Now,
he isn't now. He
may not be now. At that point, he did things that cost no money.
He went against
that was against people because of him. Now I'm asking you.
He wanted.
He's an important guy in Pittsburgh. At a turning point.
Yeah. Oh, certainly, because the city changed quite a bit. He undertook this big street repaving program. He just went over the streets, and he didn't care whether it was going to need it in another 5 years, which it did need. He didn't rebuild the streets. Previously, the city had operated with capital improvement programs when they were going to reconstruct the sewers, the bases. He did away with all that. He didn't do away with it, but he changed it. And that was his selling point, that he was not going to be anybody's boy. He was not going to be a part of the Democratic machine, so-called machine party. He didn't want to cooperate too much with the Allegheny Conference. He does now, but then he didn't. And he didn't want to, and for example, one of the things he did, he disbanded the Pittsburgh Zoological Society, which had been a great fundraising thing. And the zoo has not been the same since.
Incidentally, I use that as one indicator of that strong word when I called him a ripper.
Yeah.
He was socially jealous of the lace Irish, the lace curtain types.
I think so. I think it was some of that.
I was trying to get you to
see, actually, when he was...
I'm interviewing you. You're supposed to
say that. I can't... I'm no great authority on what he... Except what, I watched him over the years, but I know that when he came from that There'd been a lot written about him. He came when he was been a Republican. He changed his thing to get so. He was good as a councilman, but then he saw he had visions of grandeur, I think, and to become mayor. And then he, you know, he ran for state office. He just couldn't make it there. So then he switched around and became county commissioner. Now he's a very much a party guy, and he's very cooperative with everybody, as far as I know. And in fact, his brother. His brother Jim, well, he was a county commissioner. He was totally different. But there was 10 years when Pete, the city lost a lot of ground during those 10 years.
Were there any significant or particularly Jewish involvement that you could identify connected with this period of the late '60s through the end of the '70s in terms of this renewal and change?
Jewish involved?
That's right. Names and people and activities. There were many Jews involved.
Yes.
But I'm talking. Could you feel a Jewish component at all?
Well, one of them was. My memory of names. He developed Chatham Center. What was his name? And he made a lot of contributions. He helped the.
Arnheim?
Well, Arnheim was very cooperative, Stan Arnheim, and his partner, Paul Neely. But this guy, what's his name?
Go on.
He had a lot to do with the, he had something to do with Washington Plaza Apartments. That was a big Zeckendorf thing. And I can't think of his name. He had offices in the Grant Building. He was very supportive of that. He was very, very wealthy, and he had a foundation. I can't think of his name. I can find it. Dave Lawrence had and tried. He had many supporters and
Jewish people.
He had great support from the Jewish. And there were not, some of the ward chairmen were you know, particularly in Squirrel Hill area in Oakland were not Oakland so much, but Squirrel Hill. And there was one of his top people,
Ziggy Kahn.
One of his top people in the city was a guy named Frank Ambrose, who was head of, and he sewers and highways. He did a hell of a job. Bangy, they call him. But there were and there were some people like there was in the city. The city solicitor was Dave Stahl for under Lawrence. He was a great guy. He unfortunately died at a young age. Ann Alperin, of course, was then city solicitor before him. You know, she was city solicitor before she became a judge. Of course, you know, the common pleas court was dominated, was it still is, I guess, still by Jewish judges at that time. So offhand, you know, I can't think. But in the field of development, I think. In the county, the guy that developed Penn Center out here,
Sofers?
From McKeesport. He was very Berman and Passel. They developed lots of apartments in the city. So there were a lot of people.
A lot of people.
The Jewish community was very much involved. There was great cooperation from Squirrel Hill. I don't know if the Squirrel Coalition was in existence then, but it was the 14th Ward then.
14th Ward, yes.
When that was John Morrow who got that library and parking garage built at the corner of Forbes and Murray. And the community up there was... Dave Craig?
No.
Dave Olbum.
Olbum.
Dave Olbum was on city council.
Yes, but he was very.
But John Morrow was his idea that he pushed, and Flaherty held that up for quite a long.
He held it up.
He held that up.
Incidentally, that was when I finally decided he was a ripper.
Yeah.
He did it purely out of meanness.
Yeah. Malice.
He did. And that has been a great thing. You know, it's really.
It was federally funded.
Yeah.
It was going to cost the city nothing.
Yeah. Right.
If we didn't get it, we'd be
absolutely.
Years back online.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's the most active library in the city.
Oh, it's great. You know, with the parking there and everything. It's just...
there's a, when you asked me, you know, was there truth to him being a ripper? Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. But there again, you know, on council, you always had, when Dave Lawrence is one, you know, the way he wanted to represent the city was, you always had some the ethnic groups and the neighborhood groups. Mm-hmm. So you always had a Jewish person. You had Abe Wolk on council.
Abe Wolk.
You had Dave Oblum.
Yes.
Dave
Oblum represented what area?
Well, Dave Oblum was
in those days, it was city.
Well, it was city, right, but, yeah. But they came from different areas. He always had an Italian, always a couple of Irish, of course, and a couple of, and one or two blacks. You know, he had blacks going all the way back when we first came. Or I think it was a black councilman shortly after that, Paul Jones. And then Phil Baskin was on city council. So, and Phil Baskin, incidentally, was, and his brother Seymour Baskin, back in the 50s. Was probably the number one authority in the country on federal and FHA financing.
Yes.
So he got an awful lot of things started. And one of the ideas that they had when John Morrow was planning director was to get a lot of housing apartments downtown. Mm-hmm. They got some started. Mm-hmm. And Seymour did most of those. Midtown Plaza, Midtown Towers, where his offices were located. He now has the Webster Hall. He has that. And there's one across from, right on Fifth Avenue Place there. And I don't know if he was involved with the Roosevelt, but you say, but that stopped, see, after
a while. Stopped for a
but
while.
Yeah. Right. Well, and the idea was to get maybe 10 or 15,000 people living downtown. And that was what they wanted. But it stopped when, you know, during the Flaherty years, all those things came to.
Yeah. I knew it. I remember he cut off the electricity for the Point barge.
Yeah, yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah, that was terrible. Yeah. Look, did you ever run into a fellow by the name of Dave Horowitz?
Well, the name's familiar.
Yeah, I think he did two things. Up off Washington Avenue, there's a Leamington Heights.
Oh,
black developer. Yeah, you didn't follow that.
Well, I'm familiar with it.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the one on Shady and Forward.
Shady and Forward. Well, Phil Seymour Bass, the one on Forward Avenue, across from the movie, the theater.
Dave Horowitz and me in that case, and a guy by the name of the lawyer.
You mean they're near Taylor Allardyce? Yeah, well, Seymour Baskin had something to do with that.
No. Maybe he got himself named associated later.
He represented developers.
Yes.
Now he represented the guy had the bakery. At University Square was only the second co-op in the city to be, and that's pretty. You know that. And he represented Marhofer, and they developed University Square. Mm-hmm. I remember when that was developed. Mm-hmm. And we had friends. That's where Paul Cohen lived. His wife lived there. But I thought that Seymour had something to do with that one on Forward Avenue. National Development Corporation. But he may have been associated with.
I think he may have been associated with the one on Leamington Heights. In fact, he may have done the construction.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, I've forgotten.
But yeah.
Okay. But in any case, there were a lot of Jewish names and individuals associated with these renewal.
Oh, sure. And now I can say this: I left Port Authority in about 71. Left the River Redevelopment Authority, Port Authority. When I went to Port Authority, there was, I think, I and maybe one or two people were about the only Jews there. I don't know if there were any Jewish drivers. There weren't too many blacks. There weren't too many women. But when John Morrow became the executive director of the Port Authority, and that started changing very fast. And blacks came into and women. And it still is kind of, there aren't too many Jews, but they're more. Not too many Jewish drivers.
I realize that.
But there are some administration. And
why do you think there aren't Jewish bus drivers?
Well, as a rule, don't you find the same thing is true? You didn't have too many Jewish steel workers.
Right. Well, they were discriminated against. No.
Well,
is that the reason?
Well, when they Jews, there was this thing called the Galveston Plan in the early days, where the steel mills and the coal mine owners would bring immigrants over to get cheap labor. They would bring them over here. They'd come in through the, through Texas, you know, and then they would put them in the put them work at low wages in the coal mine, the steel mills. Well, I know in my uncle's case, he didn't come in that way. He came in, you know, through Ellis Island, but he went to work. He was at the mills first, but he was very religious, and he, you know, he couldn't be off. He couldn't work. He had
on Saturdays.
Well, Saturdays was one thing, and they paid him low. I think so. It just I don't know. Jews just did not, you know, they drifted into the professions and into business rather than into very few Jewish steelworkers. I don't know what.
Well, they weren't. Wouldn't you
coal
admit?
Miners. How many Jewish coal miners?
Wouldn't you admit, for the record, that it was because they weren't accepted? Their life was made miserable because they were Jewish, so they couldn't work under those kind of...
Well, that may be, but I think that even in Poland, in Russia, you did not have Jews doing that kind of work.
That the different ethnic groups... Now, I'm not supposed to be, and you're not supposed to be talking. No,
but this is
different
interesting.
Different ethnic groups follow different industrial and professional tracks. And Jews did common labor, sewing, for example,
bookbinding,
and even printing to some extent. There are a lot of Jewish work
tailors
of all sorts, and they were low enough, believe it, just that they were not miners.
Yeah. On the other hand, you know, I think Jews have dominated fields like medicine, music.
Well, now we're talking about a different class.
Or business, you know, retail business.
Because
even in the laboring classes.
What I'm trying to get him to accept is that they were accepted in those areas in the medicine field.
But
they weren't accepted in the steel mill or the coal mine.
Wait a minute. What about millinery and stuff? Jews did
They were on 7th Avenue in New York. Yeah. They started the garment industry. They made the unions possible.
Oh, sure.
But they
amalgamated the garment workers.
In the mines and the mills. Well, that's important for him
to
report.
It's very important.
There's a difference of opinion here. But we shouldn't have that. He's the man that we're interviewing. And his word is what counts. So how do you feel about it? One short sentence.
Well, you mean about the
Jews
the corset?
Did not work in the mills, and they did not work in the factories.
Yeah, well, I think it's primarily because not so much that they may have been accepted in time, but they just didn't gravitate to that kind of industry. They didn't. They were more, you know, they seemed to be oriented to other things. Now, in Russia and Poland, they farmed, but they didn't do much for farming here. Although there are some Jewish farmers out in the west.
Yeah, my parents were farmers.
Yeah, but I don't know whether it was a I really don't know whether it's a question of how much acceptance.
You're not enough.
I think probably there probably would have been some antipathy toward them in the coal mines. And in the steel mills, because many of them were other ethnic groups. They were Polish, there were Italians, Irish, and so on. So there probably would have been some, but so you didn't find them. So the Jews served these areas like the mining towns and the steel towns with their businesses, and that was kind of their orientation, I think. And that was true somewhat in Russia. They were the service. I could be wrong.
We're going to be finished in the next couple of minutes. You want to ask him a real last-minute question?
Yeah, the names of your children, please.
Well, my son, Daniel, is a freelance musician in New York, classical.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, Willa.
What's his name?
Daniel.
Daniel.
Avram, named for his grandfather, Avram.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter, Willa, is a does freelance news.
W-I-L-L?
Willa, she does freelance writing for the Westinghouse TV station in Boston. Lives in Cambridge, and our youngest daughter Julie is a social worker and works for a women's shelter, two women's shelters in Seattle.
Shirley.
Her name is Julie.
Oh, Julie.
Yeah, she lives in Seattle.
And your wife's name?
My wife's name is Eleanor, with spelled E-L-E-N-O-R-E. And she's originally from Boston. Mm-hmm. And we met in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Her maiden name?
Ullman. U-L-L-M-A-N.
Mm-hmm. U-L-L-M-A-N. Mm-hmm. Eleanor Ullman.
Yeah. U-L-L-M-A-N.
M-A-N. From Boston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And do you remember what her family trade was?
Well, her father came to this country by way of England.
Mm-hmm.
After the 1905 revolution in Russia,
uh-huh.
and got into the radio business and, mm-hmm. and formed a distributing company. And he was New England distributor of Zenith products and one time Motorola for many years. And that business then, when he died, was taken over by some other.